Daniel Parker.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Daniel.
Well, that's a tricky one to start off with. well, originally I'm from Jackson, Mississippi. I've been living in Memphis for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. I'm working on my PhD right now at the University of Memphis. I'm getting ready to start a fellowship with the symphony again in the fall. Playing along with the Memphis Symphony, as well as doing my own music, writing my own music, performing covers, and it's a lot. Okay. I produce, you know, and I just love music so much. It's part of my life. It's just something that that has been with me for 26 years.
Okay, we talked about this a little bit before the show. Tell me about your journey as a violinist and the unique style as the strings.
Well, when I was fairly young, when I was probably in middle school, I was really influenced by a few other violinists that were well known, such as None But Strings, Damian Escobar, Black Violin, as well as colleagues of mine, students, classmates, who also enjoyed improv, which is something that I was really wanted to dive more into at a young age. I remember when I was young, we would be in the practice room, me and several friends of mine, and we would just improv instead of doing the classwork of classical music that we were tasked to do. And I remember our teacher would walk in on us playing improvising, and she would just be like, "That's not what what y'all supposed to be doing." And so ever since then, it never really left me. I always wanted to explore the violin outside of classical music, outside the realm of just what is standard, what is the stereotype of music. You know, I always loved to break the boundaries, break the barriers of what can be considered music.
It's funny you just said that. One of my next questions, you breaking the barriers and the boundaries of the new music. So how has it been a violinist artist as far as in this music industry, dealing with the digital platform and all that stuff, getting your music out? How has that been for you?
Well, it's been very much an uphill battle for me, because I'm in a lane that is a niche that is not really explored as much. So you're constantly trying to reach new fans that who might be interested in your music. And usually the way I've learned over the course of the years is you have to mix it up a little bit and play with maybe covers, whatnot, that is kind of a standard. Play covers that people will probably want to listen to your own original music. So I've, like, over the years started to do more covers, because at first I was like, covers? I just like to write. I just like to write music. I wasn't really one to do covers. But as of probably 2015, 2016, I started to really start diving into playing with bands and playing more covered music, and I've learned that by doing so that you reach more audiences, they get to know you, And once they get to know you, then they'll start to listen to your own music. So it's been, it's just a journey, a ride that I love. No matter how hard or how big the obstacles may seem, I love it.
Two-part question, final question. What you would tell up-and-coming artists that's in your lane in the violin, and also, are you working on any new music of your own?
Oh, wow. What I would tell other artists who are inspired by things that I do and others like me, I would say to always believe in yourself, no matter what it looks like on the outside, and keep pushing, keep going, working on your craft. There's never a day goes by whether you have your instrument physically in your hand or if just imagining what you would be working on in your head. Either way, one thing I've learned recently is that even during those idle times, it's still practicing. And no, you don't have to actually physically have your instrument. So don't get discouraged by if you see another person, they're boasting about practicing 10 hours a day or whatnot. It's not about that at all. It's about doing what you love. And if you love what you do, then I see no way to it stopping any obstacle stopping you from achieving your dreams.
And again, about any music that you have?
Yes. I do have two albums out, two original music, musical selections of albums. Yeah, I have two albums out plus of original music, plus a new album that will be coming out that will be released this year. I haven't set a date yet for the releasing of that album, but it will be out very shortly.
And your music on all the social media platforms?
Yes, you can find me on all platforms as either Daniel Parker Violinist, or I'm otherwise known as D Strangz. That's spelled DSTRANGZZZ. There's three Z's at the end.
Right.
And it's a funny story how I came up with D Strangz. It's a tale that, you know, the difference between a violin and a fiddle. You know, a violin has strings and a fiddle has strengths. And what I do, I dabble more on the fiddling side than I do on the classical music side. But I am classically trained, so I do both. But in this realm that I'm in today, it's strengths. My name is Daniel, so it's the strengths.
There you have it. Thank you for joining us on Spit to the Beat podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. Welcome to Spit to the Beat podcast.
Mm-hmm. Bass guitar, Julian Vaughn.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Jew.
Small town boy from Kansas City, man. Uh-huh. You know, taught myself how to play bass at the age of 15 and went professionally at it at the age of 30. Now I'm in my 14th year and 12 Billboard number ones later, 20 something top fives. Life's pretty good.
That's cool. You started off as a drummer, but then mm-hmm. you moved into being a guitarist. So how was that transition from leaving the drums to the guitar?
It was easy. Music's always been in me. But you know, as a kid, they're attracted to noise. And so everybody wanted to play the drums. I say, you know what, I'm gonna find out how to play something else because I'm tired of fighting. So the bass was laying, and then the rest is history.
Cool. So you talked about the multiple Billboard's number one mm-hmm. hits and successful album and all that. So how do you stay relevant while, you know, maintaining your signature sound?
Oh, just keep putting out music, keep touring like I have been almost every weekend, and, you know, just making great music. I think that's the key, just making great music, because the people let you know if it's good or not.
Cool. Last question. Do you have anything coming out in 2024 with the people to look for?
I have a new single coming out in May It's called Kiss the Groove. And I have an album following that coming out sometime in July.
And we can find you on all the social media platforms.
All the social media, all the music platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Tidal, Pandora, whatever. I'm everywhere. YouTube got live videos on there. So I'm everywhere.
Great, great. Thank you for joining the Spit to the Beat podcast, man. I really do appreciate you.
No problem. We got to get you a Chiefs necklace.
It's been a conversational piece.
You're listening to Spit to the Beat podcast with your host, the one, the only, Stacey B. Unstoppable Puryear.
Hey, this is Stacey, a.k.a. Beat Unstoppable Puryear with Spit to the Beat podcast. Would you like to be my guest if you're a singer, songwriter, musician, producer, or promoter? Give me a call at 901-341-6777 or email me at myguest@spittothebeat.com.
Saxophonist Joe Johnson.
University on a music scholarship. Got stuck in Nashville. Got in the industry. Worked for a major label. Left the label to start my own label with major distribution. And have spent maybe the last 25, 30 years being musical director for various artists such as Angela Winbush, After Seven, Freddie Jackson, Phil Perry. A bunch of people, stuff like this.
This all up in Nashville, being up in that there all this time, or just traveling around the world?
Just traveling around the world.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
okay. I really got my musical, professional musical start in Nashville.
Did you? Yeah. Okay. So Nashville is your home, huh?
Well, you know what? Oddly enough, I actually have a home in Nashville and a home back in Memphis as of 2 years ago. So I'm going back and forth. So
okay. Okay, just up and down the road.
Hey, you got to try to keep lights on at the house, man.
There you go. There you go. So let's talk about your latest release, Life of the Party. Combines contemporary jazz with elements of hip hop and R&B.
So that's my second record.
Okay.
That came out in 2005. And we did pretty well with that record. We had a couple of the songs that go number one on various charts. The record after that was called The After Party, which came out in 2008. And now we've got a new release after all of these years that'll be coming out in hopefully June or July of this month called Back from the Weekend.
Who has been some of your musical influence growing up?
I mean, you've got to always, being a Memphis kid, you've always got to say Kirk Whalen.
Okay.
Most definitely. You know, I tell a story that, and it's a true story. His grandmother is the reason that I started playing saxophone as a seventh grader in Westwood. I had no, you know, she was like, hey, my mom didn't want me to play drums. And she was like, well, why don't you play saxophone like my baby Kirk? And I was like, okay. And I mean, I didn't know Kirk at the time.
But, yeah.
Most definitely, probably one of my biggest. Kirk, another Memphian, Hank Crawford, that was Ray Charles' music director. He also went to Tennessee State University. So, and he influenced, it's probably not a saxophone player living that was not influenced somewhat by Hank Crawford.
Okay. Have you had any memorable experience with or collaborated with other artists that kind of impact your music career?
Well, you know, we talked about my last record being such a long time, but what happened is I kind of changed my focus from being a recording artist to the musical director sides of things. So again, being able to work and write music and produce shows and arrange the band for, like I say, people that I grew up with, Freddie Jackson, After Seven, Angela. I mean, I don't think there are too many 90s artists at some point that I haven't either worked with in some shape, form, or fashion. So it does kind of steer the direction that you go in as an artist and stuff.
So you're doing a lot of producing and writing too?
I do a little bit of everything. Like I say, anything to keep the lights on.
Cool. Hey, man. I want to thank you for joining me.
Thanks
on
so much, man.
Yeah,
I appreciate you guys, man.
Appreciate
right.
you.
Please let me know if you need anything.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Spit to the Beat podcast. Want to know how you can help? Be a sponsor by going to our website at
www.spittothebeatpodcast.com and click the support tab. You can also join us each and every week live at YouTube at Spit to the Beat. Don't forget to subscribe, like, and follow. Thank you for your support.
R&B singer Peebo Bryson,
2-time Grammy and Academy Award winner. How significant winning them awards play a pivotal role into your music today?
Well, this is America. America loves a winner, period. You know, that's that. It does set you apart, but it doesn't insulate you from everything. Mm-hmm. It's just how you work it and how you perceive it. You got to always remember when you reach high pinnacles like that, that you put your pants on the same way you always have.
You gave us timeless music that even my generation still listen to, mm-hmm. growing up and everything. How has your influence of your music then and now with this new generation?
I'm responsible for half of them. so when you think of it, when you look at it from that standpoint, every once in a while I'll be at the driving range or something, my wife and I, and a guy will come along with a wife and 4.5 kids in tow, mm-hmm. and he'll realize it's me, and he'll come back and say, "Mr. Bryson," I said, "Yeah, how are you?" He said, "Nice to meet you." And he said, "Well," and he lines his children up and say, "This one was made on Feel the Fire. This one was made on I'm So Into You." And the wife is standing there going, confirming affirmation,
yeah.
that indeed it was made on that music. So if you're, that's a good thing to do. That you're, if you're inspiring people to procreate, that's a really kind of cool thing to do. Yeah. It's when you look back at life, that's better than a Grammy or an Oscar, isn't it? When you think about it, because it's life.
Yes.
And it's what they do with their lives.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome.
So,
yeah.
but in a time like where relationship doesn't mean the same things that meant before, you can either work hard at a relationship now or you can swipe right.
Right.
Yeah, it's people tend to take, especially the younger generations, they tend to take the least path of resistance and work it easier. My grandfather taught us a great lesson when we were kids. He would ask us one question. Do you want the easy way or the hard way? Of course, we wanted the easy way. And he would pinch us until we cried. And we said, "Well, we changed our mind. We want the hard way." When we chose the hard way, he would soothe us for the rest of the day and take us to get whatever we wanted. It was a great lesson that when you take the easy route, mm-hmm. you get easy results, and the results don't last. It ain't forever.
That's good. That's good inspiration for artists. That's like what Martin Luther King said: if you just living, but you're not making no change.
I'm just saying you're not doing nothing. You're either part of the solution or you are the problem.
Right, right. So y'all just kicked the two off here in Memphis, right?
Sure.
So what made Memphis the first?
Memphis is a legendary music town. Are you kidding me? Come on, man. Yeah. I cut my teeth up here. I mean, I played the lamppost.
Okay.
Are you kidding me? I mean, you know, it's I played the lamppost. I was one of the greatest record promoters of all time would be Bowlegs Miller. Mm-hmm. Bowlegs he could promote a dog and a cat in a fight. Yeah, he could do anything. But was good people, and I learned a lot about grassroots people and how you become successful by being a people person as opposed to trying to be famous. I've never tried to be famous. That's not been my goal. Still isn't.
Well, we thank you so much for sharing your time.
No. It's an honor to do so. You asked good questions. And I hope I gave you good answers.
You did. Thank you so much.
Well, it's my pleasure.
All right.
R&B singer Jeffrey Osborne.
All that energy.
Yeah, it kind of helped, man. It really did. I was vegan for almost 11 years. I just started eating a little bit of fish now.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, for 10, 11 years, I was straight vegan. And it did help. I mean, I felt a lot more efficient, you know.
Well, you look good. You just celebrated a birthday, a couple of days ago?
Yeah, I had a birthday last week, yeah.
Yeah, man.
I'm getting old.
But young in spirit, though.
Got to stay young in spirit.
How was kicking the tour off in Memphis for you?
How's what?
Kicking the tour off in Memphis.
Oh, man, it's great. You know, it's not, I mean, it's kind of like in the middle. I've been working all year. So this is kind of like right in the middle. I actually go to South Africa tomorrow.
Wow.
I got 4 shows in South Africa. So I'm heading out from here to South Africa. Can you believe that?
A long flight.
Yeah. Oof, this is a long one.
I know, about 60 years. Let's talk a little bit quickly about your nonprofit.
Right.
How has that been an impact? I know you say you're pushing music to the youth and family.
I'm pushing really mainly to enrich young people's lives. You know, I'm from Providence, Rhode Island, you know, so I went back there and I have a celebrity golf tournament there. Okay. So I bring in just about everybody. Magic Johnson hosted for me, and Dr. J comes, and Smokey Robinson, and Johnny Gill, and Philip Bailey. So it's an incredible celebrity turnout. And we don't just play golf, we jam. So it's a fun tournament. I've been doing it. This is my 10th anniversary. And it's been great. I've been able to give back to like 6 different charities in my hometown. So it kind of feels good to go back and be able to give something back to the community.
That's awesome. You just said right there on the stage, you talk about keeping R&B live and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
With this new generation, how does that feel to you as far as R&B? Is it still alive? Is it coming back or what?
Well, it's just different now. You know, everything changes. You know, when I was growing up, I was the youngest of 12. I had to listen to all the jazz that my brothers and sisters were listening to. And that went from jazz to R&B. And everybody was like, oh, R&B. My father was a great jazz trumpet player. Take that stuff off, boy. That ain't music. So everything goes through an evolution and changes. And we're just in that phase where R&B and kind of phased out to hip hop, you know, and rap. And I say more power to them. I love what the young kids are doing. I love that they're independent, that they own their own things. And I can't knock it. I wish in our generation we did what they're doing. Because back then, they all team up together. You see them all on each other's records. And we didn't do that as much back then. Oh, and that just makes them even bigger. So I'm impressed at what they do. I'm not going to knock the music. It's different. Yeah. You know, it's not. I don't think it has the character of the older music because it doesn't have a lot of melody. But it works with the kids. The kids love it. And that's who buys records. The kids buy the records.
Exactly. Thank you for being on Spit to the Beat podcast. I really do appreciate it. Hope you have a safe flight to South
Africa. Thank you, man. I appreciate it. All right. Cool.
Better.